Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and the New Statesman Stephen Bush. So, the debate is on. Theresa May actually wants to do a debate this time, only there's no election campaign. The Prime Minister has confirmed her intention to go head-to-head with Jeremy Corbyn to debate the merits of her Brexit deal. The date, 9th of December, Sunday. So, Stephen, in your New Statesman email, which arrives in the morning call, obviously the Spectator one is evening, you say that you don't actually think this is such a good idea that Theresa May has challenged Jeremy Corbyn to this. Why is that?
Well, so I've kind of, when I first saw it, I thought, okay, she's obviously across the detail in a way than he has admitted he's not on this one, but in general, he is not someone who handles detail well. But the more I think about it, let's kind of go through the potential scenarios. Scenario one is the Labour leadership having agreed in principle, it's a debate format which allows him to range across austerity, cuts to the public realm, the kind of freewheeling question time format which he does very well and he's very experienced at. Well, he will be favoured to win that, and I don't see how her getting sort of smacked around the park across the range of domestic policy is particularly helpful to her in this situation. Option two, it is narrowly on the withdrawal agreement. She has to defend a specific real-world proposal, and he can do this kind of, my Brexit deal would be better because reasons. That's incredibly facile, but seeing as it is where most of the political establishment is, it's very difficult to see how he will not do very well in it. She doesn't think on her feet. She's not a great saleswoman, which is one of the reasons why she's in her current predicament. But even if she were to surprise all of us by not being robotic, somehow winning the debate, it does not seem to... I cannot see a plausible way that this can pass the House without the votes of a substantial number of Labour MPs. It is already going to be a very politically painful moment for Labour MPs to vote for the withdrawal agreement come what may, unless there is some shift from the leadership itself. And I cannot see how, if Jeremy Corbyn were to lose this debate, the Labour leadership can shift to backing a withdrawal agreement, let alone how Labour MPs who will be worried about their own futures, worried that there won't be enough votes to do it anyway. There are Labour MPs who are willing to sacrifice their careers and seats to prevent what they see as a catastrophic no deal. There are no Labour MPs who are willing to sacrifice their careers in order to fail to stop a catastrophic no deal. And that makes it harder for them to do it. So I just can't work out what it is that she can get out of this debate.
James, do you agree?
I think Stephen is looking at the wrong audience. I mean, the audience for this is Tory association chairman, essentially. The aim is to stir up feelings of Tory tribal loyalty. It's the blue team versus the red team. It's Jeremy Corbyn, boo, hiss. If I'm against Jeremy Corbyn, I must be for Theresa May. The idea is that you get these people, you know, association executives watching this, and talk to cabinet ministers, they all point out to you that associations are less hostile to this deal than MPs are. They watch this, they cheer Theresa May on because she's fighting Jeremy Corbyn, who is not just a Labour leader, but a particularly villainous Labour leader in the minds of the Tory grassroots. And the idea is, the hope is that at the end of this debate, they pick up the phone and they call their MP and they say, isn't Theresa May great? We must save the country from Jeremy Corbyn. And this withdrawal agreement is not as bad as I thought it was. Why don't you go and vote for it? I think that is the kind of trick shot that Downing Street are attempting to pull off. I think on Stephen's point about Labour votes, right now with the Tory rebellion at this size, Theresa May needs a number of Labour votes that you could only get with formal Labour cooperation, right? Which isn't going to happen because it's not in Jeremy Corbyn's interests. So I think that the aim is to get the Tory rebellion down and then hope, and as Stephen says, that you get to this scenario where there's a realistic chance that this might actually make it over the line. It has some momentum. The Tory argument to these people will be, do your duty to the country and vote for this. You know, the Corbynites will come and get you anyway. So why not go out having done something good? But I do think it is a sign of relative desperation on the part of Number 10 that they are prepared to take this risk of the debate. And especially as Stephen said, I was sitting in the Commons Gallery yesterday and I was thinking back to that remarkable Tony Blair performance when he tried to sell the Iraq war to a House of Commons that was clearly sceptical, with his own side as sceptical about that war as Tory MPs are about this deal. That Blair performance, whatever you think of it now, was a remarkable piece of parliamentary theatre. Blair spoke with total conviction, everything. Every trick in the book was mustered. Yesterday, I was watching Theresa May, it all seemed a little bit flat. If it was going to change minds, it didn't have that. Where I was left kind of wondering where the new argument was. And I think one of the reasons why, obviously partly John Bercow, one of the reasons why the opposition to it was written up more was because she didn't come with a new point to make, a new line to take. If you were doing the 6 o'clock news, what's the new clip that she hadn't said before that she said on Monday?
James, on that, I was speaking to a Tory Leave MP in a marginal seat, very Leave area, who wants to be loyal to the Prime Minister, but at the moment says that he is just hoping that at some point in the next week or two, Theresa May comes up with something new he can sell to his constituents. Do you think there's any hope of that? Or are we going to get what we got in the Commons yesterday, which is just same old?
I think at the moment it is hard to see what the new argument is. I don't think they have a series of rabbits that they're keeping in the back garden of number 10 fattening up to be produced at the appropriate moment. I was personally surprised in that on Sunday I thought that there would be more of a drum roll for the deal, considering how important this moment when it became a formally agreed deal between the UK and the EU. I thought they would have slightly more in the arsenal for that moment. I don't think they do. And I think this is one of the things that they are struggling to change the narrative. And the worry is because MPs think this deal isn't going to pass, you might as well say you're not going to vote for it. And that's the kind of perverse thing about this. She desperately needs some sense of momentum behind this deal.
And on the subject of Labour and desperation from inhabitants of number 10, last night we had Gavin Barwell invite a number of Labour MPs to a committee room where they tried to sell the idea of this Brexit deal to wavering Labour MPs. Stephen, what are you picking up on how that went?
It went pretty badly. I mean, it was an odd choice of timing, not least because most Labour MPs are essentially of the view that regardless of how they feel about it, you have to vote against it the first time to show willing to your local party, to this idea that maybe they could get another election. You know, most Labour MPs will say, I don't see how it could happen, but maybe it could, so let's roll the dice. You know, correct choice of people to do it. David Lidington is popular among Labour MPs, but it was still at 9 o'clock on a Monday night when they had no reason to stick around. So in an odd way, despite the fact that I think it left most of the 25 or so people who actually bothered to turn up, it left them more convinced than they were going to vote against it. In an odd way, then, they could get 20-odd people to turn up. It does show that there is a Labour openness to it. But Downing Street is not doing any of the things you would need to do in order to give Labour MPs an excuse to vote for it. And as James says, at the moment, the rebellion is so large that there aren't enough would-be Labour rebels floating around anyway.
And on that, James, we've had this morning a message from Michael Fallon, who appeared on the Today programme, and he wasn't too optimistic when it came to the chance of this deal. Here's what he had to say.
This deal actually just gives us the worst of all worlds. No guarantee of smooth trade in the future, and no ability to reduce the tariffs that we need to conclude trade deals with the rest of the world. So unless the Commons, I think, can be persuaded somehow that those things are possible, yes, then I think the deal is doomed.
So Fallon says it is doomed. I mean, there was a point when Michael Fallon was seen as very loyal. During previous election campaigns, he was always a minister back when he was in cabinet. He sent out to deliver a line or throw a dead cat around at times of crisis. So the fact that he's saying it's all come undone for Theresa May, does that suggest her problems really are now very bad?
Yes, because if party loyalists, men of government types, if you asked Michael Fallon what the purpose of a Tory party was, he would say to govern the country. That would be his answer. The fact that people like him are having trouble and reservations, so I noticed that being the consummate political professional that he is, he never actually said that he would vote against it for certain. If people like him will take some persuading to vote for it, then this thing really is in trouble. I mean, to my mind, the crucial number is you need to get, because the DUP are going to vote against, you need to get the Tory rebellions combined, ERG and pro-second referendum, down to 25 or so combined. If you are having to spend time persuading Michael Fallon to vote for this deal, then that ain't happening. I think the other thing that is so damning about Fallon's criticism is the point he makes is right. Theresa May still hasn't made the choice, which is one of the reasons why this deal is so jumbled. She's not said, right, let's stay in the single market and the customs union, and then we can turn around and say, we're getting all the economic benefits of EU membership. Nor, as she said, let's decisively leave the single market and the customs union, and therefore we can say that we're going to do trade deals with all these fast-growing economies in the world, and that's where we're going to get our economic growth from. The problem is she's left arguing for a position which is neither fish nor fowl. And this is, I think this has been a kind of consistent problem for her with Brexit, which is, take the backstop as another example of this, right? If the backstop was totally Northern Ireland specific, you know, the DUP wouldn't like it, but you can make an argument which is, look, Northern Ireland is different from the rest of the UK. We acknowledge that in the Anglo-Irish Agreement. We acknowledge that in the Good Friday Agreement. These arrangements take account of that. And then you have some hope of trying to kind of sell everyone else on the fact that, you know, and I think this is a regrettable fact, but it's true, most voters in mainland Britain are not overly concerned about Northern Ireland. Or if the backstop was genuinely UK-wide with no Northern Ireland-specific provisions at all, you could keep the DUP on board and you could argue that you've done the one form of Brexit that clearly works for the union and therefore people should accept my deal. But instead she's got something that's UK-wide in parts, Northern Ireland-specific in other parts. I think this is a problem, which is because she's kind of compromised and hedged her way through this deal, it's quite hard to sell it clearly because it's neither one thing nor the other.
Now, another nail, probably not the final nail in Theresa May's coffin of a deal, is Donald Trump. The president has been in touch, not directly with Theresa May, but in comments he made, he said that this is a great deal for the EU. Stephen, is this going to have much of a negative impact, or do you think most Brexiteers were already resigned to his point, which is basically that this deal, as Theresa May proposes, it makes it very hard to do these free trade deals, including with the US?
Yeah, I think in an odd way it's actually the least important intervention of the last 48 hours because it confirms what anyone who knows anything about what the leverage points in a US-UK trade deal would be, which is, you know, agri-food, essentially is agri-food and then various bits of the public realm, which you cannot do with a UK-wide backstop. So in some ways it's the least damaging thing, but it underlines this big problem. And I think James is exactly right, and we have this weird situation where it's a Brexit where you still have the economic hit of services being out with the single market. You do not have the potential upside of being able to strike deep and meaningful trade deals with anyone else. And you have the loss of freedom of still being within the rule-taking architecture of the EU.
Look, I don't think the Trump intervention is going to be decisive. It adds to the sense that there's a pile-on on Theresa May. At some point, you know, you would think that she could jujitsu this pylon to her advantage. You know, there is a sense of sympathy for her. There's always people kind of come at her. I do think that what Number 10 need is, at the moment, there's a huge Number 10 push to get business to support this deal. And yes, I can see why they want that. If I were them where they are now, I would be having an equal, if perhaps greater, push with trade unions. Because if you wanted to find a way to start getting 20 to 30 Labour MPs to back this deal, their lives would be made much easier if you had some union leaders popping their heads above the parapet saying, look, no deal would be so bad for our members that we are prepared to support this deal. And it was, and given that the one thing she is doing, the most Brexit-y thing she is doing, she is ending free movement, you could start to kind of spin a slightly different narrative about how, you know, this is a Brexit deal that's going to deliver for workers, it's going to protect their jobs, but, you know, blah, blah, but also, you know, not personally an argument that appeals to me, but, you know, reduce pressure on public services by limiting immigration. You could begin to see a different way to sell this deal. And I think that is the thing that I'm surprised that we haven't seen more of from Number 10.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right about the internal politics of it from a Labour perspective, right? In the Who are the economic winners from this Brexit? Well, people who trade in goods, essentially. Well, who are the big Corbyn sceptic trade unions? Usdaw, retail workers, winners out of this deal. Community, steel and the third sector and other goods, basically. Again, a winner out of what Theresa May is proposing. And then, of course, Unison, a big public sector union, have got things to fear if you do have no deal and a massive cut and a decrease in the number of people working in the public sector. So there really should have been some attempts to woo trade union leaders, particularly as there are many trade unions who do not have much time for the existing Labour leadership. They do give cloud cover to Labour MPs to vote for it. But I think one of the difficulties about analysing our present moment is there are plenty of ways that you can imagine, even parking from whether or not a David Cameron or a Michael Gove would have made similar choices, or there are lots of ways that you can imagine a more sinuous Conservative politician getting out of this mess. The difficulty is they all fall down on the fact that the present incumbent of Downing Street doesn't really like Brexit, doesn't really like people who vote for or are members of the political parties, and doesn't seem to understand any of the hinge points that you would need to press to woo any of those people. Because, you know, there are lots of groups she could be appealing to, even if it was just to try and get the Lib Dems to vote for a Norway-style Brexit.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, James. And if you'd like to hear more opinions on the final deal, then do join us for the Spectator event, Brexit the Final Deal, on the 5th of December in London, with myself and James, alongside Fraser Nelson and former Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab. Just go to spectator.co.uk/final deal.